You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Welcome back to doing our monthly roundup webinar. We'll be covering data for December, not 2019 as the slide says, but actually 2018. So last month, since we have the stats and a couple deals to discuss. I know we took a couple months off of there, just had to get really busy with a few things, but we're back on track. We got the next few roundup webinars scheduled and got plans for the rest of the year. So Joe Massey is going to be tag teaming, doing the roundup webinars with me and quite a few of the webinars and classes as well this year. So again, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a realtor at YourCast Real Estate, and I focus on people who want to do house hacking and buy rental properties. And Joe Massey is my go-to lender at Castle & Cook. Good morning, Joe.
Chris, good morning. It's great to see you, man. Really appreciate you having me here on the webinar. Always lots of great information that you share on these. Hopefully I can live up to the hype as well and provide some good information. And as you mentioned, I'm with Castle & Cook Mortgage. We actually work right here in the same office building together. My team is myself and several other loan officers here in Denver, and we focus on permanent financing for your investment properties, for your second homes up in the mountains, your primary residence here in Denver or anywhere in the state of Colorado. Work with a lot of first-time home buyers, a lot of first-time investors, all the way up to very experienced investors buying their 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th property. So really excited to be here and talk about what's going on in the market today.
So what we'll be doing with this roundup webinar, we do it live once a month. And if you guys can make it, awesome. Grab a cup of coffee, grab a Red Bull, sit down, hang out with us, take in the information, and please ask questions. We do monitor those. If you can't make it, we post it on our YouTube channel and also the podcast channel. That way you can listen to it at your convenience and stay up to date on the market and some deals. So the first thing we'll talk about here are the market stats for December. So we're recording this in January, but we're talking about December because it takes a couple weeks for them to get the stats out. So if you've been following any of the market data, you know the market has, it's slowed a little bit. September, October, November is what it's looking like. And December, our listings or our active inventory is up quite a bit from December 18 compared to 2017. So we're getting the same indication that the market is getting a little bit slower here in December. So in December 2018, we had about 5,800 properties on the market. Now this is residential stuff, so four units and less. And then as far as active listings in 2017, we had 3,850 listings. So it's almost a 50% increase from inventory this December to past December. Now, you hear that 50% increase, which percentage-wise is a big increase. But Joe, you know the market. When you see that 50% increase and you know the stats, how do you interpret that?
I'm thrilled, actually. I am absolutely thrilled, Chris. I'm pointing at the screen here, so I know everybody can't see it, but if you want to show them the mouse pointer, that 3,858 listings last year, that was crazy, crazy low. Really low, super hot competitive seller's market. Now we've come up to 5,800 listings. All right, guess what? Still a seller's market, but the buyers are getting a little bit of a chance. Really what I'm seeing is this is the first opportunity that buyers have had to look at a home and think about it for an extra day or two. Really, it's the first time they've been able to do that in like 5 years. So if you've been thinking about buying a home and you were frustrated last year in the spring and the year before in the spring, right now is the time to start looking because this is your first really good opportunity you've had in a long time.
Yeah. And I mean, the vast majority of deals that I do is on the buy side, and Joe's 100% on the buy
100%,
side.
100%. Yeah. I don't sell anything.
Yeah. I can tell you, like, we've actually gotten a couple properties at discount, you know, below the listing price. And sometimes that's just because they've had, the sellers have had their property marked too high or it's fallen in a contract once or twice. But we've actually gone in there for a few bucks less. And on other properties, hey, we've gone in over listing as needed to get the property, and we're still getting into some bidding wars. But as Joe said, it is much friendlier to be a buyer right now. And if you're listing your property or your seller, this is not the time to be testing the market with a highest price, placing your property on the market at a very high price to test the waters.
Yeah, I hear people doing that. Oh, I'm going to test the market. I can always go down. That's true. You can always reduce your price, but guess what? When you reduce your price on day 45, that's what's called a stale listing. Don't do that. If the numbers tell you your home is worth $400,000, list it for $400,000. Don't list it for $420,000 and say, oh, I just want to test the market and see what happens. You're going to impact what you're going to sell your property for because you're going to have to reduce it lower than that $400,000 to get people to pay attention to it.
So Joe's advice is right, but since I'm on the buy side, I actually like when people do that.
Well, I do too. That's a good point. That's a good point.
We come in there and then we, hey, we can negotiate a few more dollars off of there, or when we come in with a strong offer at listing, at our offer, it makes us look better. And then working with Joe, we close on time. So another stat here I want to talk about is this under contract listings. Now, I find this really interesting. So the active listings is the total amount of properties that are available on the market. Under contract are how many properties are actually under contract. So they're not sold yet, but they've gone under contract and they're starting the 30-day close process. So in December 2017, it was about 3,450 under contracts. This past December, it was almost 3,600. So not a huge difference, but it's up actually 4%, which is really interesting because inventory was way up, as we just discussed for a few minutes, but the under contracts are up a smidge as well. I was actually expecting to see under contracts being a negative percent if I had to make a bet last month. Mm-hmm. I said, hey, we're going to have less properties under contract because there's less people looking at property, there's more inventory, but we've actually seen it tick up a little bit, which, it could be a leading indicator for what happens in January, February, March, which then feeds into, the hottest time in the market. So I take that, again, take it with a grain of salt, but I take that as actually a sign that the market's going to keep staying strong and that, we're not going to plateau or see an overall price decrease. Again, I'll tell you in a year for sure what we're doing next month. But right now, I view that as a leading indicator that, hey, we're going to go into another strong spring season. So if you're out there looking at properties right now, I would hustle up and take these next couple of weeks before we really get back in the full mode and be aggressive with getting the property under contract, because I think this time where it's been very friendly to the buyer is about to come to an end.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think by the time we reach March, April, and May, it is going to be a zoo out there again. So if you're thinking about buying a home, do it now. You've got about another 60 days before it's going to become a complete zoo. And, your active listings are probably still going to be up. We're probably still going to see 5,000, 6,000 active listings, but under contract is going to start going up really, really strongly as well. There's going to be a lot more buyers looking as soon as the weather gets nice. I mean, it's funny to say, but when it's cold, you don't really want to go out and look at properties. You want to stay huddled up, hibernated in your couch or on your couch in your living room, right?
I know. I always have that second, because when we looked at properties, one or two Fridays going to snow, I was like, oh man, it's so good. I had that once. I was like, I don't deal with it. I was like, wait, no one else can be out this weekend. This
That's
is
right.
great.
That's exactly right.
I go through that initial emotion. I'm like, well, actually, in the big picture, this is good for me and my client.
That's right.
Because while other people are out there sitting by the fireplace, we're out there looking at properties. So I want to take a step back and actually show you just some bigger picture data. And this is actually internal data that Yourcastle tracks. So it's a chart that tracks how many showings that each one of their internal listings gets. So if you're a Yourcastle agent and you have a listing, Yourcastle tracks how many showings actually get scheduled through them. And they actually use the central CSS, centralized showing service, which is the main showing service used to schedule properties. So I won't dive into this a whole lot since we talk about it almost every month, but this bright blue line, in early 2018, going through summers, all pretty simple or similar to last couple of years. But when you went from August to September, it actually dropped. It's about the closest to a cliff that you could do on this graph as possible, to where actually the showings per listing. So this is actually people scheduling to see a house to go do a non-open house tour of the property. It dropped in September and then stayed flat in October, November. And it actually dropped to the lowest levels it's been since like 2012, 2013. Yeah. 11, and these 12, were like 13. The recessionary levels as well. And so last few years, actually way less showings. So we were right around like 8 or 9 showings the last few months, and normally we're right around about 14 or 15 showings per property. So percentage-wise, that's a big decrease. But, and this actually confirms the under contract that you were just talking about, in December, the showings per listings actually went up dramatically from about that 8 showings per listings to probably about 12 showings per listings, to where it's actually above that 2012 recessionary level and getting a lot closer to the last few years of showings per listings. So I like this data because it's unique that your castle has, and I think it's a really good snapshot as to what's going on and can actually be an indicator, a leading indicator of what's going on next couple of months. So seeing that the showings are up and seeing that the under contracts are up, I would imagine they go hand in hand. But it's just an indicator that I think it's going to be another strong year for the Denver market. And I say strong year, we didn't talk about, I'll go back to this previous year-over-year data from December 17, December 18. Yeah, prices still went up about 5% on average. We just didn't go up 10% like we do a lot of times. So it still grew, prices still went up. It just didn't go up quite as fast, but we've been seeing that the double digits the last couple of years.
But you know what, Chris, I want to stop you for just a second. When the market's going up 10%, 11%, 12% a year, long-term, that's probably not sustainable.
Yeah.
Rule of 72, if my home's going up at 10% a year, that means it's going to double in value every 7.2 years. That's going to get really expensive really fast. So for me personally, go back one slide, please. I think that 4.8% appreciation, I think that's super appropriate. I feel really happy with that. That means your home's going to double, what, every 15, 16 years. I think that's appropriate. That doesn't freeze a lot of buyers out of the market. That doesn't have prices on this runaway train. Now, if you're a seller and you own a property, sure, I would love for it to go up 15% a year. But I really love for properties to go up 5% every year from now until eternity, versus 15% a year for the next 3 years, and then I have a 20% crash.
Yep.
So I'm actually really excited to see things leveling off, not going to go flat and probably not going to go down. We're just going to get back to a regular market appreciating 4 to 6 to 7% every year, which I think is really appropriate for long-term sustainable growth in the Denver area.
Yeah, helps keep things healthy.
That's right.
Last slide I want to show you guys. I'll move on to the next segment of here. This is data that actually shows the last like 10 or 12 years, the number of active inventory to how many homes sold that month. And so if you've seen any of our trends class in the past, you've seen this chart. And I wanted to bring this up. I know it's really hard to see if you're watching this. I'll do my best to describe it. Because you say, oh my gosh, inventory in December is up 50% from this last December. And I said, percentage-wise, that sounds dramatic. But when you actually take a step back and take the big picture macro point of view, it's actually not that big of a deal. So we were up, I think, right around at the peak, 7 or 8,000 homes inventory a couple months ago. I can't read that data on the slide. But we were at like 5,500 at the end of December, and we were at like 3,500 December year before, roughly. Now, to go back to a balanced market of what would be balanced market for buyers and sellers, we'd be right around 15,000 properties inventory. So we still have a long way to go up to be what's considered a balanced market. And if you take out the last few years of this, you know, crazy market, you take out the last 17, 16, 15, maybe 14, and you take those away, we've still been at the lowest levels of inventory for well over the last decade. So, and if you go farther back than that, don't have data in front of me, but it's still going to be historic lows for inventory. And I just want to give you that context as to, yeah, it seems like a big percentage, but in the big picture, we are still in a seller's market.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Chris. And one of the things I like about this slide, this is really, look at the forest, not the trees. Don't try to read these individual numbers on here, but take the mouse cursor if you would and highlight this 15,000. So right there, all right, everything above that period, this is a buyer's market.
I can't figure out how to make the highlight better.
Right, so this line right here, this 15,000 that the mouse cursor is going on, above that, that's a buyer's market. If you're below that with this inventory, this yellow line, if it's below that, that's a seller's market. So let's go back over here to where we've just had some change in our inventory. Inventory has gone up, and you can see that spread, this yellow line and the blue line right there. Oh, there you go. All right. That means that inventory is increasing, and everybody's like, oh my God, what's happening? Are we going to crash? No, we're still well below the 15,000 where it's going to become a buyer's market. All right. So you want to understand that distance there that Chris is drawing the line, we're still in a very, very strong seller's market. We're still in great shape for sellers, but buyers need to understand this is your opportunity to get out there, because there is a little bit more buyer opportunity than there was, you know, the past year right here, right? There's a little more buyer opportunity than there was in this year. So the point of this, don't try and stare at the numbers. See the forest, not the trees on this one. That line exactly right there, that line where we're above that line, that means we have a little bit more buying opportunity as compared to last year. So I think this is just a really good slide to see that there's no need to panic about a crash. There's no need to panic that the market's going to suddenly take a dip. There's just not enough inventory for there to be a big, huge crash right now.
Yep. And I mean, I'm looking at the data a lot because I'm getting ready to sell a property out of state, bring the money here, and I have no hesitation in buying more property in Denver at the current market, current rents, current interest rates. It's all I still think. You buy now, I'll be happy in 30 years.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
So moving on to the next segment, the monthly indicator. And this was an article from RIS Media by Suzanne DeVita. But it was actually just some interesting statistics. And she said, the housing market is at never before seen record worth. So this is quoting the article, cumulatively $1.9 trillion, that's trillion with a T, was added to the housing market, the national housing market in the past year, bringing the market's overall value to $33.3 trillion. It's a first, the report shows. Since 2012, the housing market has recovered $11 trillion and today is $4 trillion above the bubble era record peak. So, Joe, you and I were talking about this last week when we were getting these slides together. Mm-hmm. Doesn't this go against what we were just talking about with the market? The market might be changing. We're at record high levels.
Yeah. I mean, everybody thinks the sky is going to fall because, oh, my gosh, you know, my neighbor sold their home last year in 5 days, and I've listed my home, and it's taken me 30 days to sell it. The market must be crashing. No, the market's not crashing. The market was going up like a spaceship. Now it's just kind of going up like an airplane. All right. But that distance or that difference between the two, you kind of tend to freak out a little bit. But I think this is a really good sign. And one important thing to understand too, homes are often the most expensive that they've ever been. 42 out of the last 46 years in Denver, we had the highest median sales price ever.
I want you to say that again. Repeat that.
42 out of the last 46 years was the record high median sales price. Other than 4 years when we had a recession, homes have always been the most expensive they've ever been. Homes are the most expensive now, more expensive than they've ever been. That does not mean we're gonna have a crash tomorrow. What it generally means is 90% of the time, homes are gonna continue to go up in value. 10% of the time, 42 out of the last 46 years, 4 years, prices have gone down. But guess what happens a few years later?
Goes go back up.
That's right. So I still think it's a great time.
I think that's an amazing statistic. Like, yeah, and you know, because, you know, we talk about, you know, this $1 trillion data that's national market, which is, I don't know, it's a nice headline and surface level stuff to talk about, but we live, we invest, we know Denver.
Yeah.
And what's happening in Denver is what matters. And it's been 42 last 46 years, the most expensive.
That's right.
So keep that in mind if you're looking at it. Oh, wow, prices are so high.
They're
you know
what?
They're probably going to be higher next year. And in 10 years, I will bet anyone a beer out there that it's going to be higher in 10 years, pretty much no matter what happens.
That's right. Yep.
So moving on to the deal analysis. And if you guys got questions, pop them in there to the webinar. We are watching the Q&A. But moving on to, I think, the fun part. Actually, it's all fun for this roundup webinar, but we can actually get some really good discussions, is the deal analysis. So we're going to be talking about a house hack. And then we're going to be talking about a rental property. So this deal analysis is a house hack that our client purchased in North Glen. I was the agent. Joe did the loan on this property. So we know the ins and outs of this property. So it's in North Glen. So it's like west of 25, right around 104th Street, to give you that idea. So it's not too far from whatever high school is right there. And you can see on the Google Maps right there as well. But here are the property details. It's a 5-bedroom, 3-bath house. It was listed for $370,000, and we got it for $375,000. So we actually went in for about $5,000 over list price because there were multiple people looking at it, and there were multiple offers, and we really wanted this property. Because this was not just a normal, just 5-bedroom, 3-bedroom house. There was a lot of things on there that made us like it for a house hack. So, for example, when you walk into the main part of the house, so the main floor of the house, it was 3 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms upstairs, then kitchen, living room, dining room, and like a little sunroom on the back. So you walk up there, normal house. But then, not the previous owners, but a couple owners ago had actually converted the garage into a full bedroom. And as far as garage conversions go, this is actually one of the best garage conversions I've seen, because from the outside you couldn't tell. We only could tell by looking at it and seeing the other properties. And then walking inside, like it looked like a normal bedroom down there, which was not your typical garage conversion.
Yeah, this is a super solid one. You can kind of, if you're looking here at the exterior, you can see where the driveway used to go in, and or it does still go in, but that used to be the garage right there. But doesn't feel like a garage conversion. I've been in those where you wonder if the door is still going to open, like the garage door, right? This, super, super solid, really great construction.
And somehow they like even match the brick when they convert it, which like exterior brick, which is very hard to do.
Yeah.
And so you walk down the basement, which actually has its own separate entrance. So if you can see the photo, you got the driveway, then just to the left, it's just gravel for like RV parking. There's a fence, you walk out there, and then there's just a entrance in the backyard going into the basement, which had a kitchenette. It had an oven in there. So it had a small kitchen and then two bedrooms down there. And what the plan was there's an easy way to add a third bedroom if the person wanted to, just by adding out an egress window, which would be one of the easier egress window add-ons, and then throwing up, I think it was like one interior drywall with a door was needed to convert it to a three-bedroom. And they're actually going to update the downstairs kitchen as well into just a nicer, more full kitchen. And so, like I said, we got it for $375, and the list was $370, and this was back in middle of October is when we closed on it. So let's run through some numbers here. And Joe, I'll let you run through the numbers here on this sheet, because this is actually the closing statement that you prepared for this. So run us through the numbers.
So the top left, you see the sales price, $375. The client did 5% down, so new loan amount is $356,250. And interest rate, 4.875. Monthly payments at $1,885. All right. So that's just the principal and interest payment. And then you see all these flags over here on the right. No, 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 no. This is stating the loan amount cannot increase. The interest rate cannot increase. Your principal and interest payment cannot increase. No prepayment penalty. No balloon payment. This is just a regular loan, which is what I love to do. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. Just a regular deal. Down below, you see the payments, years 1 through 10. You've got principal and interest, and then you have $89 a month in mortgage insurance. Years 11 through 30, your principal and interest is the same. However, that mortgage insurance goes away. Now, one important topic that we talk a lot about is if you don't want to pay mortgage insurance every month, number one, it's not very much. It's $89 a month when you're putting down only $5%. But number two, look over to the right. This client had the option that he could have prepaid his mortgage insurance at the time of the closing. It would have been an additional $4,000 out of pocket. And if you divide $89 into $4,000, it would take roughly 45 months for him to repay himself. All right. Now, he opted to do the monthly mortgage insurance in order to minimize his cash out of pocket. But it's something that we talk about a lot, is if you don't like that mortgage insurance every month, you don't have to pay it. We have a number of options to get rid of it.
And something too, that's always good, you know, because the PMI, depending on the property and your credit score, it's just, I know it's a huge sliding scale, which you know those numbers, Joe, but I know it can really vary depending on your credit score and other factors.
Yep.
And we look at sometimes, because if you're looking to house hack, you know, you live in a property for 1 or 2 years, then move out. If your PMI is, you know, from $90 to $250 a month, hey, that can be the difference between a positive cash flowing property or neutral negative cash flowing property. Plus, that extra PMI every month does impact your debt income ratio, which
would
impact getting loans 2, 3, 4, the next couple of loans.
That's right.
And this is why I always stress when we do house hacking, like this is why you want to work with a lender that knows what they're doing, because it's all playing chess if you're wanting to acquire multiple properties this way, because it might make sense to prepay it, because you know what? That may have a bigger impact during DTI for a couple loans down the road, which may help you out. But in this person's case, $90 a month, it's not that much.
Pretty low.
Yeah. So it's just, it's one of those things where there's no clear black and white answer, but it's one of those levers that we can play with to see what impact it has on this property when you live there, when you move out, plus future properties as well.
That's exactly right. Escrow, taxes, and insurance, nothing we can do about that. Total payment, $2,300. We're going to talk a little bit about that more in the rental analysis next. Taxes and insurance are included in the payment. The very bottom, closing costs, and then cash to close, $22,000. So out of pocket, $22,000 for them to purchase this property. So not a big investment. All right, $22,000, payment of $2,300 a month. Let's look at the numbers for rent and whatnot, Chris.
So this is, we plug this into the spreadsheet we use. Mm-hmm. And you can see here, we actually just called it two units since there's the upstairs and downstairs. So we could put the rent separately so we could show you guys some different options. 5% down payment. We just ran through these numbers, about $22,000 and change for your total down payment.
Yep.
And when our client moved in there, he's living in the downstairs, which is the least desirable unit. Mm-hmm. But he rented out the 3-2 upstairs for $1,825 a month. And this is not this person's first house hack. He knows how to manage rentals, and he had it marketed and took photos and had an open house immediately to get it rented. Had no problem. And originally, he was going to rent it for like $1,750, but then based on demand, he bumped up the rent $75 a month, $1,825. And then he's living downstairs, and he's got a roommate that's paying him $500 a month because they're sharing the space downstairs. So his total rental income is about $2,325 a month while he's living there. And what was the mortgage payment on this, Joe?
$2,341, I think it was.
I was hoping
$2,315. Yeah. So he's making $10 a month and getting to live there.
Yeah.
Chris, can I come live at your house and you can give me $10 a month?
How good of a cook are you?
Not very good.
No.
Okay. All right. But that's what you got to understand about a house hack. It's super powerful economically and super powerful for him gaining wealth, right? He's getting paid $10 a month to live in this home, to live in his own house, and the value of the home goes up. Rents are going to increase in the future. He's paying down the principal, and he lives for free. What a great deal.
So we got to incorporate expenses into here.
Right.
We got the real estate taxes, which are already taxes and insurance are including that monthly payment Joe just discussed.
Yep.
We're putting away $1,400 a month for repairs and maintenance. I'm sorry, $1,400 a year.
Yep.
I think that's probably about 5% on the rent. Probably lower since he's living there. Yep. And then we got also PMI factored in here, which would be just over $1,000 a year, but that's already factored into
the monthly
payment as well.
Yep.
I did not put the utilities in here because I'm not quite sure how they are splitting it up. Plus, this property had leased solar panels or solar panel payments to buy them. And I can't remember the numbers on those, but I do remember basically like they had no electric bill. And so I'm not quite sure how they're divvying up the utilities and all that. But, you know, between roommates and all that, like divvy them up, like utilities are not going to be that much. A couple hundred dollars a month at most, probably divided in some fair, equitable manner between all the tenants. So going into what this means is that once you factor in all these expenses, it's an annual negative cash flow of $2,000 a year. That doesn't mean he's actually losing $2,000 a year because we're putting $1,400 a year away in expenses, or I'm sorry, repairs and maintenance,
yep,
which is right around $2,000. But he's living there, and then $2,000 a month comes out to about $176 a month he's paying to live there.
That's great.
Which is phenomenal. You might say, oh, well, he's not living for free. Well, he's paying $200 a month while getting someone else to pay down the debt, and he put it down at 5%. Like, that's
right.
The amazing thing.
5%
like, he's leveraging.
Down. Yeah, he may not be living for free, but he's living pretty darn close to free. I mean, he really doesn't have to spend a lot of time at work to make $176.
No.
Right? If he makes $20 an hour, he has to go to work for 9 hours per month, and then everything else he makes is going to be profit. All right. So I think this is such a great example.
So the current return while he's living there would be like a 5.5 cap rate, which I don't know, for house hacks, cap rates don't matter. We are seeing a negative 9% cash on cash return, which neither of these metrics I think are wonderful to look at while you're living there at the property because that's more geared towards investing. But do want to show that since we do look at that a lot. Now, when he moves out, and depending on how he rents the property, room by room or to a multi-generational family or a couple different tenants or whatever, estimated future rent would be $28.25 to $33.25 a month. So I'm actually going to show these next numbers based on the estimated low end of the rent. I always like to estimate conservative. If we're above it, hey, that's a nice big fat cherry on top. So when he moves out, he will be cash flowing at the low end of the estimated rents. And he'll be cash flowing at about $3,500 a year, which then translates into a 15% cash on cash return. Now, we don't see too many 15% cash on cash returns here in the Denver market currently from an investing standpoint with 20% down loans.
I don't see 15% return on anything right now. My 401k lost 6% last year.
Yeah.
All right. If I can get a 15% return, that's a 21% increase over what I'm getting in the stock market right now. Now, that's last year was an anomaly. Hopefully this year will be better. 15% return, that's just the cash. That's not factoring in the value of the property going up, principal reduction, tax benefits, depreciation, et cetera. This is a fantastic deal. And where'd you find this, by the way?
I knocked on 3,000 doors. No.
Really?
We found it on the MLS.
It was on the MLS. So anybody could have bought this?
Yep.
Okay.
Anybody could have bought it.
Okay.
And we bought it because we saw the value in there.
Nice.
And I actually like to look at cash on cash returns for house hacking properties as opposed to cap rates. But if you look at cap rates, this actually would be a 6.9 cap rate, which is, again, for a single family detached property, you don't see 6.9 cap rates, especially North Bend, like,
yeah,
great area. And the cash on cash part of the reason it's so high, hey, he's making a few bucks, but he only put 5% down. It's the power of leverage.
That's right.
And if you look at the 5-year after tax return, we're in the 44% range in that 5-year after tax return.
That's great.
Which is, so, I mean, all this, like, from a living standpoint, it's a win. For when he moves out, it appears to be a win. So I will take these deals all day long.
Yep.
So moving on to our deal analysis number two. Now for this, we're up north again. This is actually a rental that an out-of-state investor from California purchased, and it's in Thornton. It's right around, I think it was like, I want to say 136th Street, east of I-25, just down maybe half a mile or mile east of 25. And it's just, he wanted a detached single-family property. So I was agent on this. Joe did the loan, so we can really talk the numbers. Now, he was not looking to house hack it. He was not looking to do any type of creative strategies to maximize rent room by room. He just wanted a good home and a good neighborhood that'd be a great asset long term. And this, I mean, finding a 4-bedroom, 3 or 4 bath house in the suburbs below $400,000, we can do that all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are certain things we did like about this property, but overall, it kind of seems to be the gist of it. So it was a 4-bedroom, 4-bath. It was listed at $390,000, and we got it at $395,000. And this closed in the middle of October as well. And why we liked it, he was out of state. He just wanted to buy a place, have a property manager come manage it. And it was turnkey, other than probably needed new carpet. And the sellers did give like a $2,000 credit for a carpet allowance. Like, the carpet wasn't bad. It was just, it had been a family that lived there for a couple of years, and there were some Kool-Aid stains here and there that never came up. But every property manager I've talked with, they all say, Chris, get your clients to buy more detached single families in the suburbs. We just cannot have enough of them, and we can't rent them out. And, you know,
they keep them too filled.
I'm sorry. Yeah, they need more. Yeah, I'm sorry. Whoever I said they need more, like, get your clients to buy more of these. I'm like, well, you know, the numbers usually aren't as good, but I'll definitely pass that along. And so this is just a very high demand area for this style of house. And here are the numbers for it, and this is the closing statement. And Joe, I'll let you run through these numbers as well, since you look at these all day long.
Yep. So again, we'll just kind of hit this real quick. $395,000 purchase price. Loan amount was $296,000. So they did 25% down. Interest rate was 5%, always a little higher for an investment property. Payments, $1,590 a month. If we go down and we look at the projected payments, mortgage insurance is zero. And with that escrow, $1,957 a month.
Taxes, why is mortgage insurance zero?
Because they put down greater than 20%. In fact, they put down 25%. Cash to close, down at the very bottom, $107,000 total investment into this property. Really a great, you know, investment. And this is an individual from California who had a lot of spare cash on hand. And to purchase a turnkey property, I think putting $100,000 in a property like this really makes a lot of sense. But let's look at the rent numbers and show kind of how he does.
And I just want to highlight real fast. I mean, this is when you're buying traditional investment, you typically need to put 20% down. I know there are some loans where you can put 15% down, but the loan terms are better when you're at 20% or 25% down.
25 is going to get you the lowest rate, lowest closing cost.
But I mean, just that, I mean, he put $100,000 down, $100,000 and change for a house in the suburbs, not far away. And then the house hacker, a few miles down Interstate 25, bought a similar price property for about $22,000 or $24,000
down. Yeah, it was $22,000.
That's the power of if you're willing to live in a house for a year and move around, you need a lot less cash to start putting up your rental portfolio.
Yeah, basically 80% less cash.
Yeah. Oh, and so actually we put the appraisal in here too, Joe, because it was interesting on how the appraiser calculated rents and actually what they estimated for rents would be and actually what we got the actual rents once the property management company went out there and got the property rented.
Yeah.
So I hate looking at appraisal documents, Joe, so you have fun with this one.
I do this all day long. But what I want to point out here, so the indicated monthly market rent for the three comps was 2080, 2080, and 2475. So the appraiser does adjustments. We've all seen these. The appraiser goes out, does a market study, figures out what are various rents. And then down at the bottom, they've circled, we expect the rent to be $2,100 a month. That's fantastic. All right. Now that's not a home run on a $395,000 home, but it's pretty good. But I want you to look at the comments. The subject is in a market area with low vacancy, and the rental comps are chosen on their basis of similarity to the dominant features. All right, the subject is considered to have currently at market full rents with the rental properties very nearby at full rental, full market rental, recent rental expectations. Jeez, that's a mouthful. What that's saying, low vacancy, we can expect to get every dollar for rent. All right, which is exactly what you said. The property managers have said, oh my God, please buy more single family homes because we cannot get enough of them because we fill them overnight, just fast, 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 right?
Yep.
What do we get for real rents on this?
So real rents on this, we got for $2,250. So $150 higher than what the appraiser had expected.
Yep, that's exactly right, which is fantastic. That means that what the property manager is telling us is exactly right, that market demand, the number of people that want to rent this property, pushes it up above even what the appraiser thought it was going to be.
And, you know, I'm looking at the spreadsheet because this is a snapshot of Joe's rental spreadsheet. I made a mistake on here. I put 20% down payment. It's actually 25% down payment. So that will have a slight different effect onto the numbers as we look through them. But $395 was the purchase price, typical acquisition cost, and it should be over about $107,000 was the total cash at closing. $2,250 in rent. As far as expenses, taxes are about $2,600 a year. Property insurance is about $1,400. Both of those are included in the monthly payments that Joe talked about a minute ago.
That's right.
Property management, it's about $2,200 for the year. I think it came out to 8% was the fee that they are charging him. And repairs and maintenance were putting away about $2,200 a year as well for repairs and maintenance. And no HOA dues. And I didn't put the utilities in here because I'm not quite sure who's paying for what. Probably owners paying for water and sewer. Tenants are paying for everything else. But again, we're talking a few bucks, which in the big picture doesn't make a difference in my point of view.
I agree.
Now, looking at the snapshot here, this is actually showing that it's going to be negatively cash flowing about $2,500 a month. Now, these numbers aren't actually accurate because I put in 20% down versus 25% down.
Yeah.
Joe, do you have a, can you do the math in your head? I mean, what's the difference of 5% in a payment?
He'll probably be saving, so 25% down, he'll probably be, his payment would be about about $200 less.
Okay.
Yeah, about $200 less.
So that'd be about $2,400 for the year.
He'd be almost breaking even.
So we'd say about break even would be a good estimate?
Yep.
Okay. So cash flow is break even. Now, I wanted to highlight this property for numerous reasons because you're going to have different trains of thought of people like, well, why the hell would you buy a property that's cash flow neutral when you go buy it? And other people be like, hey, man, I'll take those deals all day long.
That's
and there's
right.
no right or wrong answer.
It's your investment strategy?
Yeah, it's what your strategy is. And he's out of state, so these numbers are way better than what he's seeing in San Francisco. I can tell you that much.
Yep.
And this just fit his comfort zone. It fit what he wanted. And he is really happy with the property. And he's going to buy and hold this for 30 or 40 years. And, you know, whether you buy this or property that cash flows $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 more a year, they're both going to be wealthy in the long run.
That's right.
And so looking at the numbers here, it'll be about a 0% cash on cash return at 5% down. And the cap rate, it was a mid four to high four cap rate. And that's with a property manager in there.
Right.
And this is typical cap rates for what we see in the suburbs.
Yep. But you know what? So important to realize this cap rate, it's not 10%, but you know what? He didn't have to swing a hammer. He wasn't even in town for the closing. He has not seen the property since he's owned it. He looked at it one time with you. I think he went back a couple days later with the inspection and hasn't had to do anything with it since. The property manager filled it. The property manager cleaned the carpet. The property manager found the tenant. I mean, this I still think is a fantastic return. There's nothing wrong with a 4.5% cap if you don't really have to do anything.
Yeah. I mean, great place to park some cash.
Absolutely.
And enjoy the benefit. So something we hardly ever talk about is the tax benefits, just because it gets so detailed and so nuanced. But I want to bring it in here because it actually has a big impact on the type of cash flow we will see. So depreciation, this is my depreciation benefit estimate. And when you buy a property, you buy a house, you're buying the land and the house. Now, you cannot depreciate the land, but you can depreciate the structure. And base depreciation means, hey, through wear and tear and time, that structure is going to lose value, so we'll allow you to write it off. And so what I did is I actually went up and looked up the tax assessor's records on here and see how they valued the land and compared to how they valued the house. So they valued, for tax reasons, that the total assessment, 70% of it is put to the structure. So I took that 70%, multiplied it by the purchase price of $395,000, and we come out with $276,000 on what he can depreciate. Now, the typical depreciation we do, since the residential property, is called straight line depreciation over 27.5 years, which basically means you take $276,000, divide that by 27.5 years, and it comes out to about $10,000 a year in depreciation. Now, you know, we're not tax people, so we have to give you that disclaimer, but we wanted to give this as an example. So, Joe, you hear that, well, $10,000 a year in depreciation, what exactly does that mean for the cash flow and the return?
Yeah, so that is cash that's not actually going out the door, right? It's a non-cash item. And that is $10,000 that he doesn't have to necessarily spend out of his pocket, but that is money that he can reclaim on his taxes. So the way you can think about it is, if I pay a 30% tax bracket, if I'm in a 30% tax bracket, the benefit of this $10,000 is roughly $3,000 in my pocket. Now, this property is negatively cash flowing, $2,500, but if I get $3,000 of real cash benefit from the depreciation, I'm actually making $471 a year on this property.
And actually, it's higher than that, because that's off the 20% down payment.
Oh, that's
right. 25%
that's,
down
that's
payment.
Right. Yeah.
So it could be now cash flow positive at
that's
$3,000
right.
and change.
$3,000 plus.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's important to understand that. That's a subtle nuance that a lot of people miss. In fact, I see some investors that forget to write off their depreciation when I see their tax returns. And I'm like, man, it's free money that you can take advantage of in your tax returns, and your CPA just missed it.
Yeah.
So if this mortgage thing doesn't work out, I'm getting a job as a CPA.
Man, you like paperwork, huh?
I do. I'm pretty good at it.
All right, guys. So that wraps up this month's Roundup webinar. Just want to highlight a couple of upcoming events that we have in person and some webinars. So on Tuesday, January 29th at 6 p.m., Joe and I are teaching a house hacking class. So if you guys want to learn house hacking and run through a couple of case studies for numbers and really get in the details about how numbers can add up over the long run. And we always have so many loan questions, and that's why I co-teach with Joe, because half the class is talking about loans. And then some other class we have on Thursday, February 7th, we're teaching the BRRRR strategy, which is the buy, oh my gosh, rehab, refinance, rent, repeat.
Good job.
I always have
it.
To think it's, about this when I say it.
It's the great strategy to do in the wintertime because it's cold.
Yeah.
Right?
BRRRR.
It's buy, what is it? Buy, rehab, refi, rent, and repeat.
Yes.
And I teach that. I do a lot of these transactions. There's still a lot of them available in the market. Great, great strategy to purchase properties with really low cash out of pocket.
And then February 20th, we're teaching how many properties to retire. That's in-person class. And then we'll be doing the January roundup come February 21st at 10 a.m. And that's a pure webinar, or I'm sorry, straight webinar, not an in-person class we'll be doing. All right, so guys, Joe and I do a lot of work together, and we Our focus is just helping investors build wealth in Denver. Our specialty is helping people do long-term asset acquisition. So if you're looking to do like short-term fix and flips, that is not my strength.
I cannot help you.
Yeah. And I know that's not Joe's strength, but if you're someone that, you know, you kind of have similar interest and financial goals that Joe and I do, or hey, you want to buy a property and hold on to it for 5 or 7 years or more, that is our specialty. I do a lot of house hacking, do a lot of rental properties. Joe's always a lender that I recommend, and he's actually starting the underwriting process for one of my loans I'm doing. So we've been emailing back and forth on or about the paperwork needed as well. So feel free to reach out to me, denverinvestmentrealestate.com, to talk about house hacking or acquiring rental properties. And Joe, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you to talk about loans?
Call me anytime, 303-809-7769. You can email me, jmassey@castlecookmortgage.com. My website, loansbyjoemassey.com. We actually have some training on there for the Burr strategy. I believe there's a link to your website, Chris, for house hacking. So just a lot of good frequently asked questions, a lot of good videos on there about how to buy properties. What do I need to be prepared for? You can also get on there and download our mortgage calculator if you want to plug in properties and see exactly what the monthly payment's going to be.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. And Joe, thank you for joining me.
Chris, always appreciate it, man. Thanks for putting this together. Look forward to doing this again with you next month.